Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to another episode of the Need to Know podcast. This is episode 190. My name is Robert Crane, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Brenton Johnson. Welcome, Brenton.
Good to be back, Robert.
Good to hear. Lots of stuff happening. We've decided that we'll introduce a session where we'll just catch up on things all around Microsoft Cloud, and then we'll look to do the interviews on the alternate ones, because otherwise our episodes are getting a bit long. So this episode, we'll have a bit of a chat about all things happening Microsoft Cloud, get you up to date. Probably the biggest item to mention is next week, so next Monday our time here in Australia, will be the Microsoft Ignite conference, the big IT pro conference. The great thing about that is they'll be streaming all the sessions so that we can stay up all night and OD on coffee and watch that live if you want. But of course, they will be recording it, so you can make a you can watch that after the event. So beginning to build out my session content, the sessions that I want to see. I expect to see a lot of announcements, really cool stuff coming out. Looking forward to that. What about yourself, Brenton?
Yeah, so I heard there's a slumber party over at your place on the weekend to do a recap of all of these things. Bring your own popcorn, PJs, settle in for a night of catching up on the latest news in Microsoft.
Isn't slumber party where you sleep? This is not going to be a sleeping event. There's lots of coffee
around. Oh, that's true. No sleep at all. Well, too much to get through.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot on social media. That's the thing that you find is all comes out at once. But we're looking for some updates around, especially the Microsoft 365 business product. I'm expecting some good news there. Also, more stuff around SharePoint, OneDrive. But again, I think there's going to be a huge amount of stuff, and it takes a long time to get through it. And I'm still working my way through the 2017 content on YouTube. So it's going to keep me busy for at least another year going through all the content. But it's really good. And Microsoft does deserve a pat on the back here for, obviously, A, now streaming all the events live. So if you do want to watch live, it's fantastic. But also the recordings that you can go back and view later. And we can also download the majority, I'd say 99.9% of all the presentations as well. So they do a really good job of making the event available to people who don't necessarily have the resources to go over there and attend. So looking forward to that starting next Monday. Lots of reports and updates that we expect out of there. So again, like I said, we'll discuss that when we get onto our next podcast episode. I think there'll be plenty to keep us busy there. What else have you got? Anything
we'll be
else
booked up for a few weeks? I've been working in the new partner center. So as most CSPs, cloud solution providers, will have to do is they've got to go and get explicit acceptance of the global terms of agreement for Australia for all their customers or whatever country they're in. So we're currently working with the distributor to try and figure out how it gets done. Microsoft's got some mechanisms in there to help with that. Through their new partner center. If you haven't signed up for that, I think you've got 14 days left before they shut the old one down forever. So you better move on to that and get it done. A new partner center lets you do all your action pack, gold, silver certifications through it. It pretty much replaces the old Windows Live-based system into an Azure AD-based system. So just sort of trying to get my head across all of that today, get that across. Found some really good tutorials online on how to get across all of that. And that's what's going to keep me busy for the next couple of weeks, I reckon.
Well, there's always stuff to do and there's always stuff to update. And again, we need to make sure that we have all the compliance in place. And again, part of being a Microsoft partner means doing regular reviews or updates of your agreements, because they do obviously change over time. So what I've seen myself out there that I think I'd like people to know about or make sure they know about is obviously the new look to Outlook on the web that's coming. You can opt into that. That'll be coming out to tenants on first release, and there will be a button in the top right-hand corner that you can select to get all the latest and greatest features. It's very interesting. When you actually have a look at this, it's beginning to look very much like the Teams interface. So it would seem to me that Microsoft is beginning to settle on the Teams-style interface with search up the top and, you know, Teams and stuff on the left-hand side and the chat or the mail on the right-hand side. So we should see what that's like when it comes out for the web. So watch out for that button in the top right of your Outlook on the web to opt into all those new changes. So what I've also got here is that I think we talked about this last time was the fact that Microsoft Teams is now in Australia and Japan. So if you spin up a new tenant today, you'll get your Microsoft Teams all in Australia and Japan. Existing tenants will need to migrate just their chat across. Microsoft will be providing a tool to do that. So I think we have mentioned that, haven't we?
Yeah, I think I can't remember if we were talking about that. We certainly had a bit of a discussion on data sovereignty and the importance of that. And, you know, is this something that we should be horribly worried about? But, yeah, Microsoft's showing a lot of leadership in this space around if you want your stuff in Australia, we're going to make it possible. Whereas a lot of the other tech companies, like, you know, you look at a Dropbox or something like that, Dropbox has never said they're moving anything to Australia. They set up a point of presence here, so it's quick. But if you're worried about your data being in another country, then a lot of these big tech companies aren't interested. So I've had Microsoft take the lead and, you know, not only give you the access to having it here, but help you migrate things over is just it's a really strong positive leadership step, I think.
So one of the other things that I do notice that we probably haven't seen from Microsoft, speaking about leadership, I suppose, is that there's still no word about a local technical or partner conference here in Australia. Now, last year we had that in the November timeframe, I think. So we're getting closer and closer to October. There's not a lot of time left to actually organise this and get bums on seats and all that sort of stuff. So beginning to get a bit worried that this may not happen this year by the sound of it.
Yeah, it looks like we're all going to have to get plane tickets, Robert. And
yeah, we're going to have to convert to US dollars, which is going to make it even more expensive for all of us to get over there. So interesting, because I thought, yeah, my understanding was is they had the venue at Darling Harbour there booked for a number of years. So still time, I suppose. But yeah, you certainly want a bit more notice than this now. So anyway, we'll see. Keep our fingers crossed that that will happen for us as well. Now, one of the other follow-ups from last week was there has been some information around the Azure data center outage that happened in the US South Central. Basically, what happened there and why it took the extended period to get the thing, all the services back up and running. I've heard a couple of interesting discussions from Microsoft around this. One of the things they, I suppose, noted was for them it was very important to make sure there was no customer data loss, and this obviously meant that there was a trade-off between making sure that the data was secure versus making the data available, because there's a difference there. If we make it available, it may be corrupted, it may not be current. So basically what happened was is that there was a storm, and that basically overloaded the cooling mechanisms in the data center. That caused the items, servers and that whatnot to start overheating, so they had to be shut down in an appropriate manner and make sure the data was moved to appropriate locations. And again, this is where some of the, I suppose, the planning wasn't, aimed at such a large, you know, a large situation. And these sort of things you only tend to learn when you have the forces of nature really throwing things at you. So there's a write-up about that, some interesting information there. Obviously, Microsoft's going to take that away and improve. These things will happen, but again, it was a force of nature. And again, we've got a typhoon or whatever bearing down on the US and one also in the Philippines. So Mother Nature can still take out a data center.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, I think it doesn't happen all that often. So it's a very hard thing. Like, you can plan and plan and plan and you can practice and you can have your fire drills, but until it happens, it's a very, very difficult thing to to knock down. So
especially at that scale, I think that's the thing. It's like you can sort of test it up to a thing, but you know, how can you test the, you know, all the cooling failing or all the storage accounts, you know, all the storage servers overheating? So again, things of this scale are very hard to obviously do a demo test. You have to, like, you know, effectively hold data center offline. But there are learnings that Microsoft will take away. There are some critical points that weren't spread across data centers. Microsoft now has zone availability, which means you can spread your information and, again, your resources between different data centers. But again, it's a bit like electricity. Its uptime is generally pretty good, but when it goes off, it does have a major effect. So it doesn't mean that you should negate planning. Moving it to the cloud doesn't mean you shouldn't be doing backups or doing the normal disaster recovery process. So that is still something that IT pros and their customers need to discuss and work out what works for them. Because, again, anything with human beings, we know, is still potentially going to have issues, never going to be perfect. So you've got to make sure that you do plan for that. But again, when you sit down and think about it, it was a pretty severe event that caused that. And again, Microsoft, you know, to its credit, did get that up as quickly as it could, obviously making sure the data was always there for customers, and now is beginning to report and give us more details on exactly what happened. So again, I think everybody, Google, AWS, and Microsoft will learn from these sort of incidents and improve, but that doesn't mean it won't, you know, something similar won't happen in the future when Mother Nature decides to throw something at a data center. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll give you any updates we have around that. Anything else grabbing your attention out there, Brenton?
I've been trying to do some more stuff with PowerShell. I've been quite inspired by being on the podcast with Robert and the power that comes with being in PowerShell. So I did find this 7-minute video that was a bit of a 101 to PowerShell. So I think one of the challenges when you're first getting into PowerShell, particularly if you don't have a development background, like my development background is HTML and CSS. I did a little bit of Visual Basic at school. So I'm not a programmer by any far stretch of the imagination, but just this video was really good at just sort of explaining how it works from a really high level conceptual. I thought, I think a lot of people would get a lot of value out of a video like this, because you know, if you haven't got the fundamentals down, it's very, very difficult to understand why isn't the script working. I found out mine wasn't working because there was something wrong with my partner tenant in the end, but in that journey I was able to find out by going through and learning all this stuff. So like, all the information's there, it's just it's just a matter of getting started, I think. So I thought I'll put that there and see if it's of any value to anybody. Have you got any top tips for when people should get started?
Well, I think the thing is that obviously PowerShell is, you know, a bit of a scripting language, so it's a bit of programming that's involved. I think the biggest challenge is firstly, okay, this PowerShell I need to learn, but I need an application. You know, why should I use PowerShell? So when you get, even before you get that, you need to set up your environment, especially if you're connecting to Office 365 and to Azure. So basically I've done a video which we'll put in the show notes so that you've got access. That'll show you how to set up your PowerShell environment for Office 365. You basically need to install the modules for SharePoint, Skype for Business, all the services into your environment. It's pretty straightforward, not very difficult to do, but you do need to do that before you can launch commands. And then I've written a number of blog posts of late that call out some handy little things that you can do with PowerShell. So probably the most recent one that I have released is, again, these scripts are freely available in my GitHub repository, which again we'll put in the link in the show notes. But basically this one will go to the audit logs for your Office 365 and report successful and failed logins for every user. So it will look through the logs. It will then tell you if there is a failed login, a failed user login, and if there is a successful user login, if you want to select that option, and that will report on that. The other one that I've done recently that I'll point out to people is basically one of the most common ways that people get phished is, well, after they get phished, is that they set up an email forward to monitor the account. So what I've done is I've got a PowerShell script that will verify, will see whether the mail account has a forward that people may not know about it, but running that regularly, again, I've got an article that shows you how to do that with Azure Automation. So one of the benefits of PowerShell is we can use Azure Automation to run our PowerShell scripts on a regular basis. So again, great video there, or the great little introduction will certainly help people get started. My suggestion to people is make sure you set up your environment with PowerShell to get to the services you want in Office 365. Once you've done that, is okay, what do I want to do with it? And probably a good thing to look at doing is to look at email forwards and so on. So I think that will give people enough to get started there, but if they've got questions or feedback, by all means, shoot them through and we can go from there, and we can take we can help Brenton on his magical path to being a PowerShell expert.
Oh, I don't know if I'll ever be a PowerShell expert, but I tell you what, I logged in and had to turn on modern authentication because I didn't realise, but sometimes it's off in the tenant. So if you don't have modern authentication turned on in your Office 365 tenant and you can only do it with PowerShell, then you 2FA needs an app password for Outlook and whatever, which is not great when you're rolling it out. So what I did is turn that on, and now you can use 2FA with
So typically you see that on older tenants. So if you've got a tenant that has been, you know, probably a year or two old, then it probably hasn't got modern authentication turned on. You have to run a PowerShell script to turn it on. I think that most new tenants that are provisioned today do have it enabled, but again, if you do have issues and need app passwords with Office 2016 applications like Outlook and Skype for Business, then you need to do run a PowerShell script generally just to turn it on, and that will overcome that that two-factor authentication issue that you've mentioned there. But I think that at the end of the day, IT pros really need to invest some time and learn some PowerShell. Get familiar with it, get comfortable with it. You don't have to be an expert. So there are two key elements to being a PowerShell expert that I think even Brenton can learn. Do you want to know what those are, Brenton? I can make you an expert probably.
Yeah, let me guess. Control-C, Control-V.
That's right, copy and paste. So the good thing about PowerShell is you can basically take from somebody else, build on it, improve it, add to it, understand it. So there's all PowerShell scripts are obviously a script that you can read, find out what's going on, and that's the advantage. Take what's out there and repurpose it to your own needs. I have, like I said, a GitHub repository with probably, I don't know, 30 or 40 scripts in there now that you're quite welcome to take, modify, use as you see fit. And again, that's a benefit of sharing when it comes to things like PowerShell. And it certainly gives you that repeatability, and it also gives you that consistency when you want to do things like looking at audit logs or checking mail forwards or looking at securities or reporting on things. So again, spend some time. We've got the links in the show notes for you that you can go and have a look and get started with PowerShell. Send us any questions or anything that you'd like to look at a deep dive. But again, it's not nearly as hard as you think.
Yeah. I also found out how to connect to PowerShell with 2FA as well. So I was incorrect when I said that a couple of podcasts ago. You certainly can connect to Office 365 with 2FA. It's just a different command that you need to run, which I was not aware of at the time. So
it's a bit more of a pain in the butt, basically. So, but yes, you can certainly do it. And then you've got to look at connecting to, you know, SharePoint Online, you've got to connect to Exchange, you've got to connect to Skype, you've got to connect to the Security and Compliance Center. So all of these have little nuances that you can certainly do individual or build into a mega script if you want. But again, once you do that and you do have that scripted and copied, and I have done that for you in that repository, so you don't have to go out and build it yourself. That's going to save a lot of time, and then you can actually go in and start running some commands in there. So the first place I'd suggest is have a look at Brenton's link, get started on there, then go to my GitHub repository, and then you can take those scripts there and then connect up to the services and then start running some commands against them. And I think once you get a little bit familiar and start using it, you'll find that it is a really, really handy tool and can certainly do a lot. So one of the things I've built, for example, is a best practices script so that when you spin up a tenant, you run this best practices script against it, and it runs a standard set of commands. It turns off things like POP3, IMAP, prevents forwards, it turns on auditing, it does a whole range of things, about 40-odd items that should be done, I believe, on each tenant individually, and that's going to give you a baseline. So that's how easy it is. It only takes a minute or two to run, and you get that consistency out of the box. So that's the real big benefit of PowerShell. So follow my blog. I've got plenty of scripts and links there, and I'll be doing more as we go through, because again, it makes life so much easier to be able to script things. Anything else there, Brenton? What else have you got that you can share with us?
Oh, actually, there's I don't know if you want to mention this on the podcast or not, but there's a new training provider in town, CIALearning.com, is it? Is that what it is?
CIALearn.com. I can't, less than is the better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you probably should register learning, because I keep typing in learning. Stuck in my head now.
So you aren't learning, you're just learn. So, all right.
Yeah, CIA Ops Learn. So say it a couple more times so people don't do what I did and put learning.
So
that's a new venture with Robert Crane, is it?
Yeah, so basically the idea is I've done online training, and I do face-to-face training, but obviously online training through a place called CIAOpsAcademy.com. I do webinars, but that's been mainly focused on the technical training, the higher end, learning how to do PowerShell and things like that. And one of the things I see out there, a big requirement, is for end-user training. So the ability for users to have their own on-demand training. They can go and do a bit of Outlook today, maybe a bit of SharePoint the day after, and they can have a track they can follow, they can have a path, they can have quizzes, all that sort of stuff to learn the product. Because I think that's one of the biggest challenges most users have, is they want to use the services, but they certainly need some training around that. Having a learning portal that provides that for them at a relatively cheap cost is going to allow people and the businesses to get up and running faster and also be more productive. So again, have a look at that, CIApsLearn.com. And there is plenty of options there. There's close to 1,000 videos, I think, on all Office 365 services, Outlook, OneDrive, SharePoint, Teams, Power BI, everything. Help you get up to speed with your business as quickly as possible. And the good thing is as the product improves and adds services, then you'll also be able to take advantage of those. They'll be pushed automatically in the portal, and you'll be able to take advantage of those as well. So one of the other things that I saw that may be of interest to people is this concept of helping customers shift to a modern desktop. Again, we'll put the links in the show notes for people. So they're looking, Microsoft's obviously building more analytics into their services, so you'll be able to see what users are doing with their Windows 10 machine and their Office, what their commands they're running, how well they're working and being productive, and then pull that back into a portal for you to view. We've also got some more security around that, and one of the big things they announced is the fact that there'll be a longer Windows 10 servicing for enterprises and educational institutions. So one of the complaints from many IT pros was the fact that Windows updates were happening too quickly. So Microsoft is basically looking to back that off to basically from a 12-month or 6 to 12-month cadence now to an 18-month cadence, which will give people more time to test the updates and whatnot. But again, that will not apply to home users. So home users will still need to take those updates as quickly as possible to protect us all. So lots of options. We'll put the link in the show notes for you to go and have a look around that. We're seeing obviously the talk around Office 2019 as well. So they expect a few desktop applications to start poking through and becoming available to people who want to go and have a bit of play with those. There are still on-prem versions of Exchange 2019 and SharePoint and whatnot. So again, Microsoft has committed to that, but obviously those products will be roughly 6 months or more behind what we see online. So online's generally a better bet. It's typically aimed at enterprise customers who are obviously going to take a longer cycle to update their environments. Anything
you
else?
Understand why? Yeah. You know, if you've got a if you've got 40,000 machines out there, and one service pack update breaks your line of business application, and you just roll that out, like the variables are you know, millions and millions of variables, and you know, it might take 6 months to go through and just test one update to make sure it's right. So it's a very difficult thing for an enterprise, but I think when you zoom down to the small business, I don't have problems with Windows 10 updates as a general rule of thumb. I've had a couple go wrong, but most of the time they tick along. Windows 7 I've had a lot of issues with, but I think that's because everything's getting so old that's running Windows 7. I've got four machines left, and I'm really telling the customer every day, why the hell would you have these? This is crazy. But anyway, they've got to find budget and buy them. But everyone else is on Windows 10, and I just don't have issues with the updates. And other people might disagree. Feedback at Need to Know. Was it needtoknow.cloud?
How long have you been on this podcast and you don't know the appropriate material? At least you'd have it written down in your OneNote, surely.
I should have it tattooed on my arm.
So you can do it, obviously, via feedback at needtoknow.cloud if you use the traditional email, at N2KPodcast in Twitter and Facebook, and obviously at contact Brenton to help him remember the email address if he forgets it again. Speaking of Windows 7, wasn't there something around Microsoft looking to charge people to provide continued updates to Windows 7?
Yeah, I think this is interesting. So for those who don't know, Windows 7 is out of support as far as I'm concerned. There's no more feature updates. It's now in the security update stream, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, so that means that it's stagnant. It's an old product that Microsoft's not actively developing anymore. They're patching the holes in it as they come up, but I think it's 2021, 2022, something like that, the security updates run out. We saw this with XP, where a lot of big companies, we talked about, well, you're talking about a couple episodes ago about the big, whichever ransomware variant that shut down everyone. WannaCry, was it? It was one of those big ransomware variants, and that was got in through an XP machine. And Microsoft doesn't want you to be insecure, but like they can't force you to upgrade to Windows to XP, so they end up with all these XP machines in the wild and really no plan around it. So they've said quite openly and upfront this time that if you're a big company and if you want to run Windows 7 for longer than what it's supported, we're going to charge you a monthly fee in order to pay for the support and the updates on that. And this is only, and this is an interesting thing. It's not going to be available to your home users. It's not going to be available to your small business. So don't tell your customers they can just chill. Don't move to Windows 10, 10 yet. It's all right. They actually have to go unless they have an enterprise agreement or some sort of agreement with Microsoft, and they want to pay all this extra money for basically they're getting the lost opportunity cost of not having Windows 10, plus they're having the issues of supporting really old legacy operating system, which was great 10 years ago, don't get me wrong, but compared to Windows 10, it doesn't really come close as far as security, productivity, user experience, in my opinion. I just don't think they're comparable products anymore.
I think you're beginning to see you're beginning to see a lot of limitations. So again, I've generally not had any major any issues with the Windows 10 updates. Occasionally you know, maybe shut your machine down, it says it needs to do updates. Yeah, that's going to happen, but I'd rather be up to date. Certainly use it with the family, never had any issues, and that's worked well. But I think we're seeing more and more limitations around things like joining to Azure AD, connecting to modern environments is becoming more and more difficult with Windows 7. And obviously we've got the security issues as well that will crop up. So the less Windows 7 machines we have, the better. I think that they certainly make us all more vulnerable, put more risk into the system. So if we can upgrade those, Microsoft has got some options there around things like the Microsoft 365, which will give you a free upgrade or whatever to Windows 10. So that's a great option they've brought in place. And there are some people that do need, obviously, perhaps to stay on an older version, but you could also think, look at running, don't forget that Windows 10 Pro and Enterprise support Hyper-V, so you could run a Windows 7 VM inside a Windows 10 machine there if you really needed to. So there are options, And again, we really want to make sure that everybody's secure, because we're all connected together now on the internet, and one person is all it takes to potentially cause risk to the rest of us. So we don't want to have that. So yeah, Microsoft again is going to have to again charge money, because it's going to take them time to obviously write and fix any updates for people who aren't up to date. So I think that's a fair call, and restricting it to that audience is also a fair call. Because, you know, they're, I suppose, the ones that can afford it, and they're the ones that will need it. So makes sense there. What else? What, anything else that grabs your attention that we've seen out there, or are we all just going to hold our breath and wait for Ignite?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot to talk about when Ignite rolls around. So I don't have a lot more to talk about. You know, I think the sort of stuff we're talking about, the Outlook web interface, looking more like Teams, I think that's a... that's a great step in the right direction. If you look at the screenshots, it doesn't look that much different. So it's not like trying to take someone from desktop Outlook to web Outlook. It's a slightly different web interface, but it's still very, very intuitive and very easy to use by the looks of things. I haven't been able to turn it on. So yeah, make sure you've got your targeted release set in your Office 365 admin, so that will pop up for you. If you're still using desktop Outlook like me, I use desktop Outlook most of the time, but I open up web Outlook pretty much every week trying to find emails, because the search is just amazing in the web interface. You can find any email from any time, basically, whereas in the desktop app, I find a lot more difficult to do the searches. So I think there's a lot of really positive things going on. I'll be interested to hear what happens in Ignite. Do you have any reflections on the episode, Robert?
I think that, like I said, there's going to be a lot that's going to come out at Ignite that we need to prepare ourselves and I suppose, you know, dole that out in usable chunks. We expect to see, like I said, product updates around SharePoint, OneDrive, Office 365 in general, Office itself, Microsoft 365 Business and whatnot. So there will be lots and lots of improvements. It'll be very interesting to see what Microsoft takes direction-wise. I'm very keen to hopefully see some more power or some more reporting potentially around advanced threat protection, ATP. I think it will be nice to be able to dig into that a bit deeper and get some statistics and get some more visibility into how it's dealing with attachments and things like that. That will be great to see. Expect to see some more features with Microsoft 365 Business. So it's a very good product for the SMB, but I think there's a few things missing there that we'd really like to see. I think that Microsoft have been listening, and hopefully they'll deliver those shortly that will give us those sort of advantages. And again, we'll cover that. We'll try and dive into that and give you some relevancy as to what's changed when it's coming. But remember, obviously, there's going to be a huge amount of stuff from products like Azure as well. So it'll be a bit of an overload probably in the next couple of episodes, but that's good for us. Always something to talk about. We'll have our regular interviews. We'll have our regular co-presenter over there, hopefully, if he doesn't get distracted too much by PowerShell and decide to become a developer on the side. As we've mentioned before, the way that you can contact us is at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and feedback at needtoknow.cloud is the best way to use that desktop version of Outlook that Brenton's so familiar and happy with. And again, if you want to contact me, I'm at DirectorCIA on the Twitter, and I will let Brenton hand off with any other last things before we end this episode.
No, not much else from me. As I said, go out there, have a play with PowerShell this week. So even if you just watch the video and just start to get familiar with the syntax and how it's laid, if you put 15, 20 minutes into it, you're going to be a lot less intimidated by PowerShell. And when Robert's putting up his blogs about how he's able to manage 1,000 users when you can only manage one, because he's got the power of PowerShell, and how he's able to manage 1,000 tenants as easily as you can manage one. This is the sort of stuff that you need to be across, I think, moving forward as your customers grow and as your requirements grow. So do have a play with that this week. And yeah, again, send us out your feedback if you have anything to say on about the podcast.
So
that's all from me.
I can quiz you next episode about how all these PowerShell commands, can I? You'll be a whiz by next podcast, will you?
Well, if you tell me beforehand, I'll come with a cheat sheet and I'll just answer them.
So there you go, on the record that Brenton Johnson does cheat. All right, so thank you very much, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.